All right, so welcome to another episode of my podcast. And this time we're going to be looking at how, in my view, conservatives exploit the fear of socialism and egalitarianism for their own ends. And I'm going to start off with saying something that is sort of conventional, shouldn't really be controversial. I'm going to say that with, you know, some certainty, liberal democracy is the best possible system to achieve prosperity, social harmony, and individual freedoms. And that, in contrast, conservatism or far-right ideology, or even a conservative-leaning democracy, has much to offer to achieve culturally authoritarian goals, but is likely to lead to different, arguably more problematic outcomes. And yeah, I know that problematic is a bit of a buzzword, and, you know, some people will roll their eyes when they hear that term, but, you know, it actually does apply sometimes, and I think that really is true in this case. So, you know, I mean, one aspect of it is the phenomenon of a caste system, which, of course, is a primary element of social division and authoritarianism, and it's frequently a part of any sort of social conservatism, you know, the othering of various different groups. You know, insert group name here, and you will probably find there was at some point in history at least some marginal attempt to sort of treat that group as something other than you know, the dominant group, or than the desired group. You know, this technically isn't just about, you know, the power dynamics at the top, because even technically groups who are marginalized can still engage in this type of thinking, you know, like towards either other minority groups or however you want to look at it, or the those at the top, you know, that it can go in multiple directions, is basically what I'm saying here. So, yeah. So you know, a lot of this, too, has to do with, you know, familiarity and tradition, you know, which is also sort of a weird cyclical thing that has us looking at history and current events and saying, well, I've got deja vu. Where have I seen this before? So, you know, like, you get patterns of genocidal thinking and different wars and various conflicts and just random patterns of violence sometimes because of a difference in cultural opinions or what have you. And that has a lot to do with the fraying of the social fabric, which is frankly at the heart of a lot of conservative thought. Like, they actually thrive in a weird sort of way on chaos and disorder while claiming that they represent, you know, order and law and order, you know, in other words. So, you know, if you want something that's, you know, even marginally left, they will, you know, the conservative movements out there will often simply say a knee-jerk reaction that you want communism or socialism. It doesn't necessarily mean you do, but, you know, that's kind of what they've been trained to say and to think about anyone who challenges any sort of right-wing ideology. You know, it could just be that you want a sort of democratic and pluralist society. You know, you might reject certain tenets of socialism, but, you know, that's not going to matter to these people. They've really been, I guess, indoctrinated into the belief that anyone to the left of so-and-so, including the almighty orange one, is a communist or a socialist, or sometimes they'll even use the word fascist without really understanding, you know, the technical distinctions between communism and fascism, because it's oddly sort of like an apolitical political movement in a way. And fascism really thrives in that sort of confused environment where people, you know, frankly don't even know what they're talking about half the time. It's largely ahistorical and really without any coherent philosophy other than the potential to implement sort of draconian policies and simply have societal violence. So, you know, there's a lot of people who question anything that's even slightly socialistic because they object to a political ideology that they say redistributes wealth from the rich to the poor. Although that's, you know, theoretically in stark contrast to a system where power and wealth flow from the powerful, or I mean from the poor to the rich. You know, that's the kind of system that the far right tends to actually embrace. And, they see any sort of wealth redistribution idea and they instantly think, oh, it's bad. Even though, of course, even some of the very basic aspects of the economy basically require some wealth to be divided, you know, to the common folk. It can't all go up to the wealthy people. So how are you going to ensure that the ultra-rich are not just going to rip everybody off every step of the way? Well, what do you know? That's where that law and order idea kind of comes in, potentially. But the wealthy, the ultra-rich and the mega-donors to the two-party system in the United States, they don't really like that idea. So, you know, they have really set us on a potentially devastating course. And of course, being that they are ahistorical, they don't really understand that even somebody like Karl Marx, he actually, yes, he advocated for communism, but he actually believed that the state would wither away at a certain point, right? So communism was not just a way to treat government as an end unto itself. They actually had sort of a utopian aim going on. And, you know, the alternative to that, we are told, the antidote, is to just give all the power to the rich, all the resources, all of the media, the basically all the education system, everything, just hand it over to the ultra-rich because they obviously know what they're doing, right? Even though we've seen time and time again that they will rip people off, they will rob them blind, they will break all of the laws that they can, sometimes just for fun, you know, they're corrupt. They have a lot of crony capitalism going on as opposed to, you know, like a meritocracy. They really like to use the government to their advantage, too, so that it's not like they're actually truly anti-government or anything like that. Like, even if you actually look at the tax proposals of the Republican Party, like the most radical plan is a national sales tax to replace the income tax for a lot of these people. So that means that they're actually not even truly anti-taxation. They just want to shift the tax burden over to the general population even more than it already is. So that's really kind of revealing that they're not even truly against the government, even though the Democratic Party and, you know, the conventional liberals will constantly try to depict them as, you know, anti-government radicals or whatever. But actually, like, a lot of them actually love the government. They love how the government actually props up corporations and the military-industrial complex and private prisons and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. And, of course, the government will be used to implement the social conservative agenda, as it already has been. You know, that's not been left up to the free market, like, you know, the repeal of Roe versus Wade, They've used that to implement policies on a state level, and they're trying to do that on the national level too. So even though they will criticize the federal government when it's convenient for them to do so, they'll turn right around and say, hey, let's implement this on the national level. So all of a sudden their talk about states' rights being so important kind of goes away when it's to their advantage. You know, it's really kind of funny. Like, that's, it reminds me of, you know, how in Charlie Brown, well, everybody's heard this analogy probably, but, you know, Lucy will put the football at, isn't that Lucy? I think that's her name. But anyway, that one bitchy character will put the football down and Charlie Brown will try to run at it and then she'll yank it away. Well, that's kind of like how they swindle people when it comes to the concept of states' rights versus federal rights. You know, that they'll make it seem like they're actually radical and, you know, like cool or rebellious or whatever, but they're truly not. They're not anti-government on really any significant wavelength. So don't buy all this hype about them being like some cool radical anarchist types or whatever. It's pretty far from the truth, okay? So, you know, when it comes to state-sponsored welfare, you know, the welfare state or moral activism that has anything to do with liberals and leftism, conservatives will spin that to say that liberal democracies are embracing a more restrictive set of cultural values or ideals, and they'll treat it as if it's being actually illiberal as a democracy or something like that. And they will claim that those aims are authoritarian simply because they call out political power. And of course, they'll take out the inevitable, example of, you know, like a leftist going too far and condemning like a movie or something like that. And they'll say, oh, see how stupid political correctness is or whatever. When really, you know, like it's at the end of the day, just a matter of opinions. It's a difference of opinion. And, you know, it might not always be extreme all the time. Like now the narrative has shifted. You know, it used to be against cancel culture that they were railing against while hypocritically engaging in cancel culture all the time. Remember, Bill Maher was basically canceled back in the day for his comments on how war was being conducted and things like that. So there was always like some far-right attempts to cancel people who were liberal or on the left. And, you know, that's really been, these days, almost like set aside. That's no longer really the issue for them. The main issue now is simply that, you know, there are black people and gay people in movies at all or stuff like that. Like, that's one of the things that these far-right people are actually complaining about. And if you don't believe that, go ahead and look it up online, you know. And one of the other signs of that is, you know, we've had politicians who were associated with the far-right. Like, there was one recently who was actually voted out of office because he was revealed as a neo-Nazi, and I might do an episode on that later in the, you know, later on in the future. But you know, you can find stories like that. It's a pretty common thing these days. And you know, the main complaint right now is this DEI thing that they're, you know, diversity, how does that go, diversity something or other and inclusion. That's like what they're all worked up about, you know, as if that's such a controversial idea, you know. But if you really look at, you know, all of this stuff in history, certain strains of leftism have led to authoritarianism, you know, like Stalinism, of course, you know, North Korea. You could point to North Korea. To some degree, Cuba, you know, and a few other countries too, of course. But many of the authoritarian regimes that rose to power in history, you know, before, during, and after World War II, were actually more conservative and not liberal, so it would make sense for the conservatives to note that as well, if they're being fair. And conservatives will also say that liberal and leftist movements associated with globalism are scary, though, of course, the far right is also engaged globally, including through corporate power and military power. They just don't like structures that have, to some degree, rejected cultural conservatism and embraced some of the values of liberalism. You know, they've employed cultural conservatism in the service of their political objectives, which is largely what conservative means at this point. You know, it's not really about principles so much as it is about power. You know, they can easily set principles aside whenever it's convenient, as I've already mentioned. And many of the established so-called strongmen or authoritarian leaders have been part of the military, including Saddam Hussein, you know, and other of these great, incredible, majestic leaders. You know, they don't represent, you know, liberal values necessarily. They tend to represent conformity more than they do any sort of far-left principles. And, you know, that's one of the biggest weaknesses of conservatism overall, is that time and time again, you know, the appeal to tradition leads to exactly that, you know, this embracing of authoritarian strongman types. And it really comes at the expense of intellectualism generally. And I think at the end of the day, it ends up being self-refuting, but because it relies on brutal force, you know, a lot of people go along with it anyway. And that's really one of the tragedies of authoritarianism, is that it's very tough to not become one once that ball has got rolling. You know, I mean, if you reject the status quo, well, you might get squashed or imprisoned or, you know, something bad might happen to you. You might have to, at the very least, keep your head down, so to speak. But anyway, that's really all I have to say about it now. I've probably said some of these points before here. But, you know, all right. Have a good day.